Why are you bringing politics into this?
It's election day.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
One day I understand. One day go see the baby be born and come back. You're a Major League Baseball player.
Did I not tell you?
Yes, you did.
See, don't answer. These are rhetorical questions because you know I told you and you know I'm
not. Analytics don't work at all. They're just a crap to some people who were really smart made up to try to get in the game because they had no talent.
This kid is a gamer. He's a follower, he's a playmaker, and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got T-Bone, he shattered the mold, and all he does is win, all he does is win.
Hello and welcome to Hot Takedown, 538 Sports Podcast. I'm Chadwick Matlin, an editor at 538. With me in the studio is the full set of Hot Takedown panelists. It's
the whole
Neil
crew.
Payne.
The
Hi,
Election
Neil.
Day crew.
Election Day crew, Neil, sports writer, sports editor at 538. Neil, do you have a political bone in your body? I don't know if I've ever heard you really go on a political jag before.
I don't know. I mean, I'll probably be involved in some capacity in tonight's proceedings, if not simply as...
Looking for the sports angle?
I was going to say because we need warm bodies on hand to to edit things and make things move along smoothly. But, you know, it's all about the team effort here at 538.
Love it.
And this is a
just
political
like democracy,
day.
Neil. All right. Yeah. And Kate Fagan, our senior poll watcher. Kate, what are your sources saying from out in the field?
Well, I'm a poll watcher, so I watch polls. I don't deduce from them and deconstruct from them.
You must have gone to a polling, center this morning.
It was a little bit of a line.
Capacity.
It's true.
So
yeah.
What's the, what was the mood?
A little bit. Where'd you go?
It was 35, 40 minutes.
Very long.
I don't know. It could have been 2 hours from what I heard. So I felt good about my polling experience. Yes,
that
I don't
helps
know.
Our listeners out there.
Personally, my polling experience was great. I will not be here tonight. I will be sitting on the couch.
Excellent.
We have couches
Thanks.
In the office.
Hi, Chad. I forgot to say hi, Chad. I feel like that's a staple.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, Chad.
Great to hear your voice. All right. On today's show, we're talking about the Cowboys because this year's Cowboys are beginning to look like the old Cowboys, and a lot of it has to do with rookie quarterback Dak Prescott. We will try and figure out whether Prescott is for real after 8 games and what that means for Tony Romo. Tony Romo has to be one of the most star-crossed athletes in America. But you know what? I'm going to wait to defend that hot take later. Then the College Football Playoff Committee has begun to rank teams, and Alabama stands alone at the top. We're going to run through 538's ELO projections and what they say will likely happen as the season rumbles towards the finish over the next few weeks. And then we're going to take a walk down to the basement where the Pelicans, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Philadelphia 76ers are waiting for us.
Set up camp down there.
Yeah. It seems like those two teams are going in different directions, but we'll talk about it with Chris Herring, 538's new Chris
Herring.
Right. Stay tuned. And of course, a significant digit, which our producer Joe Sykes has promised me will be a surprise, which is never good.
Always a good sign.
Yeah. Before we get to all that, just one quick word about Ahead of Their Time. I hope you are continuing to listen, listeners, to Ahead of Their Time. Last week was a story about the two-handed backhand in women's tennis. It featured a woman named Peaches, which was a particular delight, as well as overbearing tennis coaches, and sort of how one new move revolutionized the women's game. There is not going to be ahead of their time this week in your Hot Takedown feed. Something about the election and people's attention not being on sports history and how sports history has changed. But
my attention is always on sports history, but they told us,
the juice wasn't worth the squeeze this week.
That's an interesting metaphor. I like it.
I see. To me, O.J. Simpson has corrupted the
juice.
Word
I've
juice
never
in that, in
thought
that.
Of O.J. Simpson when I use that phrase, but now that's
Did
all
you not
I'll
watch
think about.
The FX series of O.J. and David Schwimmer? As
I
Rob
only
Kardashian
watched the
saying,
Ezra Edelman
juice,
documentary.
Juice. Okay, anyway. Anyway, you're going to get a new one, a new Ahead of Their Time next week, listeners. It's the final Ahead of Their Time. It's going to be great. Neil, what's it about?
It's about an athlete that is very near and dear to pretty much everyone who watched football, I think, in the late 80s and early 90s, and that's Randall Cunningham and the way that he influenced a lot of things in football, from, you know, the rise of the black quarterback to mobile quarterbacks being able to kind of take over games. And he was also a video game legend to people that played Tecmo Super Bowl, so... He's got it all. Yeah. Randall had everything.
It's an epic tease.
Are you combining your love of video games and sports under the radar and just sneaking that in there?
I'm not combining them.
Oh my gosh, as you know, makes me uncomfortable. All right, on to the show. Seems like the 90s again in Dallas. The Cowboys, 7-1, running their way through the league, passing their way through the league. A quarterback that is a sensation. A running back behind a great offensive line that seems like he can't be stopped. Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott. Guys, do you have deja vu, or is it just me while you're watching these Dallas Cowboys?
I think it's just you.
Okay. Yeah, the Prescott and Elliott are a little stylistically different from
Emmitt Smith and that facile narrative onto a story.
Hot takedown?
Because there's a quarterback and a running back who happen to be good.
You know,
that's what we're saying.
I would never cast aspersions.
I wouldn't have
like
said facile. I would have said easy, but that's cool.
No, that's the difference between
that's
you.
That's right.
All right, so Dak Prescott 7-1, or the Cowboys are 7-1. Prescott's had a great 8-game stretch just last week, a 35-10 rout of the Browns. Prescott went 21 of 27, 247 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 0 sacks, 0 fumbles. That is a total QBR of 96.4 out of 100. Neil, let's skip the QBR debate today, but most importantly, Neil, you wrote that this 8-game stretch that Prescott has debuted with is maybe as good as any 8-game stretch that Tony Romo has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get there, let's listen to Ray Lewis talk about the two quarterbacks.
We can watch this drama play out, mm-hmm. right? Or you can let this young lion who came across the Serengeti said, I see you didn't take care of your family well, mm-hmm. so I'm going to come take over your pride.
Correct.
That's what Dak has done.
Yep.
And now Jerry Jones has to be okay with saying, now a new king is in town.
He really rode that metaphor.
Yeah, he went with it longer than I thought he would.
Right, even like brought it home at the end. So Dak Prescott is a young lion crossing the Serengeti?
Yeah, and he and
is his walking music going to be as sensitive as his Lion King? You know,
I hope not. I hope not.
So you guys respond to that. I'm actually at a loss. Like, is the choice clear between Prescott and Romo? Let's begin there. Neil, from where you sit.
Well, I did write that story where I looked at the only 8 starts Dak Prescott has ever made in his career, and I compared them to all kind of 8 start stretches of Tony Romo's entire career, and I found that there was only one Tony Romo 8-game stretch that was better than the only 8 starts we've ever seen from Dak Prescott. So make of that what you will. That's extremely impressive. On the other hand, you do have a lot more sample of Tony Romo. For all the stuff people, you know, talk about him, he's been one of the top handful of quarterbacks in probably certainly of his generation, and if you kind of compare him to the league average over time, he's probably a top, I don't know, 20, 15 quarterback all time, statistically, just looking at the numbers relative to average. So
what's a team to do?
Well, Neil, I think that specific piece of data, the 8-game stretch, like at first you're like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And then it brings up so many questions like, we don't know how Tony Romo would have played this 8-game stretch,
right,
given the same team around
and
him.
And Ezekiel Elliott, right.
But we've seen Tony Romo over the years certainly play with good offensive lines, especially the last couple of years. But he's also played with a surrounding supporting cast that didn't have the level of talent that we see on this Cowboys team now. And so it's impossible to really, but it's an interesting data point,
right,
but it's
impossible
to know really at the end when the Cowboys actually have to make this decision and Jerry Jones is saying, like, we're going to play it by ear. But I kind of given the whole data and all of the stats we have about Tony Romo, and if you ignore the qualities like momentum and, you know, the vibe that Dak has with this team and all that, and you really just say you've got a quarterback and Tony Romo who has played historically great over his career, wouldn't he be a better choice at this point? If he's healthy.
I mean, if I knew the answer to that, and if the Cowboys knew
the
answer to
that. But what do the stats say?
This is a great question. I think, Romo, another thing that you have to take into account is that he has the really long track record that we've talked about, but also in extremely limited action last year, he wasn't his normal self, which, by the way, he still was above average, but it was only like mildly above average, if that. And so it really has been two whole seasons since the 2014 year where he had pretty much the best year of his career. So that adds another wrinkle into it where it's not like Romo is coming off of, you know, one of his best years. He's coming off one of his worst years and has missed all this time due to injury. And you have Dak Prescott, you know, kind of playing, the house on fire while he, Romo
was out. He's
a lion
in the Serengeti.
He's a lion. Sorry, excuse me.
Setting fire to the Serengeti.
Yeah, exactly. He's committing horrible acts of anti-environmentalism. And so, that's what makes it such a difficult question. And so the stats, I don't know that they have like a very good solution on this. And you alluded to this earlier, Kate, that football players are really tough to disentangle from their teammates and especially quarterbacks with their offensive line. And, you know, Dak is throwing to Cole Beasley as his number one receiver, whereas Romo had a prime Terrell Owens at one point. You know, there are all of these things that go into it that are kind of beyond quantification or you struggle to kind of isolate.
I'm a little confused because I feel like on the show we have talked about how quarterbacks usually don't get better as they age. We have talked about how
to a certain past a certain age, which
sure.
Romo is past that age.
Okay.
He's 36 this year.
My point holds.
Yeah.
We have talked about how there's an arbitrage to be had with rookies or with sort of younger players who are on rookie contracts, for example, and how that can free up resources elsewhere on the team to spend and accentuate the play that's coming from this rookie who's maybe playing above his contract. We've talked about, I think on this show, or at least written about on 538, about how a quarterback in his debut year, you get a lot of information. Our colleague Ben Morris has really written about this. You get a ton of information in their first few starts. And just if a quarterback hits a certain number of touchdowns, if a quarterback hits a certain number of yards completed in their first year, whether that means whether it came along with a lot of touchdowns or a lot of interceptions, just having a lot of yards is a great sign for that quarterback's future because it suggests something about his ability to play in the NFL. And so all of this suggests to me that Dak Prescott is the real deal. I sound like Skip Bayless saying that. And you have Romo as a trade piece that can get a huge amount if you move on him.
But in the NFL, there's a reason why trades are very rare. It's because you have to eat the cap hit of the player that you're trading away. It's not like you can kind of, like in the NBA, where you match the salaries and you can kind of get something in return. Tony Romo has an outrageously high cap hit, more than $20 million this year. He ain't going nowhere, Chad. He is staying on the Cowboys, and that's why they have one of the big reasons they have
Dak
the
Prescott
problem.
Is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't do that either because, to your point, the odds of Dak Prescott not being a really good quarterback at maybe like or good at a bare minimum after the 8 starts, I bet that if you looked, no quarterback who didn't get hurt and, didn't turn out to be good after the kind of 8 consecutive starts that Prescott has made in his first 8 starts,
Dak Prescott, Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, Griffin III being the quarterback who got hurt, I suppose. Top five, eight.
And Dak was
there.
Way better than any of those guys by a wide margin.
Sorry, those are the best rookies.
QBR.
First eight starts, correct.
Well, the Cowboys have to answer this question, in my mind, by asking themselves, is Tony Romo that much better than Dak that he will win a, like, that he is the difference between a Super Bowl and not a Super Bowl. Because but, other than that, I'm not saying they can answer
but
that.
But was Romo the problem of not winning a Super Bowl in the past? Because what Neil was saying earlier was that Romo is one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and what failed around him, aside from him not being able to hold a field goal, what failed around him
that's
was
what I'm
the
saying.
Team.
So if you're saying that Tony Romo, at this point in time, right now, not get, like, futures, not future value, because obviously you would say that Dak has more future value considering the ages. If you think Tony Romo, now with the pieces that the Cowboys have, is the difference, because maybe he's just slightly better than Dak right now because of his experience, is the difference between winning a Super Bowl and not winning a Super Bowl if you stay with
this
Dak?
This year?
This year. I mean, you got to say the Cowboys are in the mix for mm-hmm. winning the Super Bowl
but
this year.
But it's not just about this year, right? It's
but,
about four,
but if
it's
you
about
can win a
now.
Super Bowl this year, you don't worry about – you don't worry about, well, how will Dak feel if we start him again next year? Or
but are you
if
worried about
delayed?
His progression? No, you, so you don't worry
I
about
I don't
that.
Think you are that worried about it. I mean, I don't think he's the quarterback you think he is. I mean, if he's concerned about not playing the last half of this season, if it means that Tony Romo is the difference between a Super Bowl and not a Super Bowl, that's the question that I think the Cowboys have to answer. Because otherwise, it's like you play Dak.
And it probably, the one kind of saving grace for the Cowboys is the fact that they're not carbon copies of each other stylistically, even if they do have, even if we thought they would be equivalent in terms of their QBR or whatever kind of stat you want to use to quantify their production, that Prescott, you know, more of a mobile quarterback and can allow you to do different things, especially than a 36-year-old Tony Romo. And so maybe it comes down to the coaches, even if they do consider them equivalent, trying to figure out what's the better fit with the makeup of this team. And seeing the way that they've played and the way that they've run the ball, especially in the first half, I don't know that you could kind of make a super convincing argument that the way that they have played so far should be tinkered with or changed, you know, significantly. And that would be an argument to kind of keep Dak Prescott as the starter.
There are, I mean, this is all anecdotal, but there are Cowboys fans, sadly I know a number of them, who feel like when they watch the Cowboys, they love Dak Prescott, but they see plays that the Cowboys are leaving on the table, that they've over the years have seen Tony Romo make. And so there's a lot of them that are like, we love Dak, we think he's the future, but if you're talking about capitalizing right now, I see things that Tony Romo would do out there that might be the difference. And that's, I mean, that's all, I don't know, that's not quantifiable.
I know the answer to this problem is have a relief quarterback. Have, you know, like we talked
right.
about
then
Andrew
what if
Miller.
Your reliever right. is better than your starter, do you start your reliever?
The same
we've
predicament
about
we
this.
Found ourselves in baseball.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've created a whole new way, a whole new strategy for football, let's leave it there and move on to college football, where I feel like you would be more likely to get a reliever QB in college football because things are a little looser, there's more experimentation, that the offenses are maybe more simple, and so you could have different styles of play where you could really make that pull that off.
Possibly, Chad.
Neil, I just found your new career. College football coach. Before we keep going with the show, a word from one of our sponsors. Hot Take on this week is sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They do that by shipping you ingredients, pre-packaged ingredients that fit the recipe that you have selected. And those ingredients don't cost a ton. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Those meals this month in November, pan-seared chicken with roasted fall vegetables and butter, caper sauce, spicy lotus root and purple carrot stir fry with sweet potato noodles, lemongrass roasted port with Romanesco cauliflower and coconut rice. Those are the kind of delicious meals that you're going to get when Blue Apron mails you some of those ingredients. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, and all of them can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. And you get to pick those recipes. You customize them based on your preferences every week. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/takedown. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. blueapron.com/takedown. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Okay, on to college football, where we usually have a guest to take us through the ins and outs, because there are so many teams, so many leagues. so many permutations, but today it's just the three of us. You know why? Because we are equipped with a 538 prediction model of what's going to happen in the college football playoff. We debuted this, I believe, last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
now.
No, it was last week.
And let me just run through what's going on real quick. This takes in what the college football playoff committee rankings are, what ELO rankings are, and those are our pet power rankings, and what FPI football power index rankings are, which is run through a different part of ESPN stats and info. It takes all those power rankings.
Right, and I should note the ELO in that is not actually the same as the one that we use for football and basketball and so forth to try to figure out how good a team is. It actually tries to mimic the behavior of this college football playoff selection committee, which is kind of an interesting twist.
I want to mimic
that we can
their
talk
behavior.
About. Yeah.
You want to predict Condoleezza Rice's
yeah.
behavior before
yeah.
it happens?
Well, what kind of pantsuit she's wearing to the next meeting and all that?
So we take all those rankings, we do some math to them, and then out comes a simulation of the rest of the year that tries to predict human behavior. Not just the ELO doing that, but all of the math does it as well, where it tries to predict what the college football committee will eventually choose as their top teams.
Can I sneak in a quick question here then? Because one of the big points as we enter the second week of the college football playoff committee ranking the top four, one of the discussion points is Bobby Petrino's comments at Louisville that, like, they need to just blow out opponents and, like, what about sportsmanship? And then it brings up the question of course, strength of schedule is of value. And, of course, margin of victory, I'm assuming, comes into play. So as you were building this model, how big of a factor? I mean, I get strength of schedule as being a key factor, but then margin of victory comes into play. And also then sportsmanship, because it's like, well, do you want a team to win by more than 30? Really?
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of interesting because margin of victory can do two things or operate on a team's odds of making the playoff in two kind of different ways. One of the ways is it improves their power rating, their perceived strength. Blowout victories in college football, you know, maybe tacking on that extra 55th point against some, you know, cream puff when you're up 48-0.
That's a really sad commentary on humanity, though, that we are rewarding teams for beating down on the weak.
Well, so there is a diminishing return effect to that. So tacking on that 55th point is not going to get you really all that much with the committee, but maybe convincingly beating a pretty good team by, you know, 30 instead of 23 or something like that would get you, you know, more brownie points with the committee. And that's something that we found that it is predictive of how you will play in the future, but it also, the ELO component of it kind of adds to your perceived value when, and this isn't arbitrary, this isn't something that we kind of decided on behalf
You've
of the committee.
You've seen it happen.
Well, we used historical coaches poll data when building this ELO component that mimics the behavior of the voters in the committee, and we looked at the way that they reacted in the past to blowout wins. And it turns out that above and beyond just how it reflects on your talent, they'll give you extra kind of style points if you roll over a good team.
Cool. So the first rankings came out last Tuesday.
Yep.
Some more will come out during election night.
Yeah,
coverage.
They really planned
yes.
that one out.
Tuesday, which is,
well,
yeah.
I'll be
first,
watching that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The top
You'll
three.
Be refreshing the 538 model, right. But the 538
yeah,
college football model.
Of course.
Yeah. So the top three are Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan. No surprise, given that they are all undefeated. And then the fourth team was Texas. One loss at the time, Texas A&M. And then Texas A&M went out and lost. And so the 538 model basically no longer gives Texas A&M a shot of making the playoffs. But on this model, you can see what happens when teams win out or lose certain games. You can create these scenarios, basically, as you try and figure out, well, for example, what would happen if Alabama won out? Unsurprisingly, they're undefeated, and they make the playoff almost certainly. And it tells you there's a 61% chance of Alabama winning out. Whereas when you start to play, especially with those lower teams that make the playoffs, so Washington versus Ohio State, for example, if both of them win out, then because one of them plays Michigan, Michigan drops out. And so they would probably both make the playoff as 3-4, let's say, but Michigan would drop away. And so, Neil, you've been writing about this a bit. does this seem a little different than other sports for you that you cover where you're trying to divine the future, because there are all of these sort of like landmines that are ready to go off for these different teams if they play one another?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the fact that you have basically this kind of de facto Big Ten championship or kind of something that weeds out either Michigan or Ohio State on the last day of the regular season before the conference championship weekend, that kind of creates this bottleneck where only one of those teams can really have a chance at the playoff. And I think there's just a lot more uncertainty. Like in a sport like the NBA, all you have to do is that of the components that you mentioned that we're doing in this exercise of the college football predictions, the part of kind of figuring out how good every team is and then simulating the rest of the schedule and then figuring out how often based on these simulations that a team makes the playoffs, that's pretty easy in the NBA because you have a set of standings and there are defined rules of, if you are in the top eight teams in your conference in record in the NBA, barring some kind of weird divisional quirks, you make the playoffs. And that's
more than that too. It's that if the Celtics and the Cavaliers play each other and one team loses once, they're not out of the playoff picture. Or even if they get swept in the season series, they're not out of the playoff picture. Where because every game is so leveraged in college football, one loss against a conference opponent can really hurt you.
And I'm so going to issue a hot take right now, but you can't help but also try and deconstruct like the quirky element that the college football playoff human committee seems to enjoy about these college football playoff like top four rankings, especially earlier in the season. It's almost like they know they want to invite like the quirky friend to the party always. They don't just want the top four that everybody would kind of name in a more algorithm way. They always want like you want to say, oh yeah, Texas A&M, like we understand that on all the levels, but you can't help but think from a human level, like they loved introducing Texas A&M to bring up this kind of discussion point. And I feel like they do that week after week.
Let's remember, this is a capitalistic enterprise. Yes, if I may get a little bit
they don't want it to be predictable in the way an algorithm is predictable. They want it to be a development of storylines.
And we should point out also that we learned this the hard way in the first year that we were making this model.
That's right.
That the top four in these early editions of the rankings don't really actually mean that much. And we our first year we kind of figured that it would follow the same type of trajectory that something like the AP or the coaches poll traditionally did, which is if you win and the team that's ahead of you loses, then you kind of move up in the poll and it builds off of the previous week and that off of the previous week to that and so on and so forth, going back to the beginning of the season. That is not the way the committee acted in the first year of the system, and we kind of shook things up the second year because they did that type of behavior every single week up until the final rankings.
Right, and then it's like, we got to get this right.
Right, and so they played around and did what you were saying, Kate, which is like experimented and made things compelling and wacky and invited controversy.
It's like the Bachelor, where you want to have the quirky friend in until it gets down to like the serious decision.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is legitimate, and so then you have the clear cut.
Right.
Winners.
And
there.
So they will kind of do that building off the previous ranking until the last edition, in which they'll kind of just resort everyone according to who they think is kind of most deserving to least deserving. And that is something that we tried to model when we revised our model, and we introduced all of this kind of potential that things could be shaken up by the committee. And that is why you see a lot of uncertainty in who can make the playoff in the sense that, Alabama is an 85% shot at the playoff right now. That makes sense. Clemson 79. But then once you get down to Michigan, third in the playoff rankings, they only have a 55% chance of making the playoff. And so Kate keeps clicking Colorado winning out the rest of the season, which is changing the odds before our very eyes. But,
43%
even
to
Colorado, 7-2 right now. If they won out, they would be 43% to make the playoffs. And then you get into, how much does winning your conference matter? So these are things that, are in some ways it's a far bigger challenge to model than just something like
that
the NBA.
That means that they would have beaten Washington in the Pac-12 title game. And I'm also going to take a picture of this and Instagram it. I can do that later.
So let's wrap the segment. But let me just say real quick, a devil's advocate argument.
The devil has enough advocates.
The College Football Playoff Committee does not need to try and create a system that makes forecasters happy. Another flip side is that if they are going to have this cockamamie weekly rating results show and things like that, that they should try and include as many fans in it. You know, they should have the suspense and the wild cards and all that, because it doesn't matter until the final
thing. Right, exactly.
And so to treat it soberly all the way through after they've set up this system is actually antithetical to the system that they've set up. And so they might as well lean in to the thing that they
built. You think they're just sitting on their thrones just laughing hysterically?
As Washington complains about their ranking.
As we all just spend hours trying to deconstruct.
We're like, what does it mean that Texas A&M ranked fourth? They're like, ha ha ha, it means nothing, you fools.
See, watch them run.
Okay, on to the NBA, where we are here to talk about bad teams. I feel like we mostly talk about good teams on
yeah.
this podcast. And we usually say, well, it's... You know, is it to be believed that a team is good or not this early in the season? We're here to talk about whether we should believe that bad teams are actually as bad as they look this early in the season. To help us out with that, it's 538's newest employee, Chris Herring. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Longtime listeners will recognize your voice, I think, from one or two hot takedowns in the past. You came on to talk about... whether or not data was being discussed in African-American sports writing and management circles the way that it was overall within sports. And then I think you also came on to talk about maybe Derrick Rose when he came to the Knicks or something like that. So let's get started. It seems as though from the outside looking in, if my anecdotal read of the hot takeosphere is that the 76ers, because Joel Embiid is so good, even though the 76ers are 0-6, they've got a great future ahead of them. The process may be worked out. Ben Simmons still coming back from injury. Noel's, you know, not necessarily having an impact yet at all. Whereas the Pelicans are 0-7. Anthony Davis has something like a 40% usage rate. And Anthony Davis is averaging 30 points a game, but there's no one around to help him, and so the Pelicans are going nowhere. My question for you guys, are they actually the same team, but it's just that Embiid is new, and so it feels like there's more potential energy stored up in the Sixers?
I think people are jumping the gun just a bit. They still haven't won, and that's okay. They're not supposed to be a playoff team this year. But, I mean, Embiid sat out essentially 2 years, and it's awesome that we're getting a chance to watch him play and that he's doing as well as he is. He still has flaws. No one expects him to be a finished product at this point. He fouls.
What are some of the flaws that you see in the game?
He fouls too much. He turns the ball over a whole lot, considering how often he has the ball. I think it's four times a game right now. And he's going to make mistakes. I mean, he's essentially playing out his rookie year right now. But he's still... You know, from what we know about him right now, he still might be very injury prone. And so the fact that we've seen him play, what is it, seven games so far, six games or whatever it is right now, you pair that with the fact that Simmons is out right now and still hasn't played his first real game yet, you can't really conclude that the process has taken and run its full course yet, because we haven't seen them be healthy yet.
I don't think I look at the two teams in the same way, simply because on one, there's a case of the unknown with the Sixers, and then with the Pelicans, it feels like a case of the known, in that we know Anthony Davis is really good, and we know that they're missing a lot of players right now. So do I think that they would be winless right now? Probably not, right, if they have once they get Drew Holiday back, who's at home with his wife who just had brain surgery and who's also pregnant, and then Tyreke Evans is missing and Quincy Pondexter. So... But we also have seen the Pelicans with those guys, and we know that it's not a competitive team when we're talking about competing at the upper echelon level. So that's our known quantity mostly with the Pelicans, whereas with the Sixers, despite having the exact same record and really having the same record that we've seen from them at this point in the season and at various stretches, it feels like there's a framework that they're working in, and all of these unknown talents that we're just starting to see. And so we don't know yet what that will mean for them. Because, I watched their first game, and I'm like, oh, they actually look really good. They have not looked as good as they did that first game again. But they also, like you said, they don't have Ben Simmons. And now we're seeing, all of the assets that they have stockpiled. So I look at them like all of this just, cosmic potential.
Neil, is there a way that two teams who are winless can have different winless records? You know, when you look at the teams, are there different underlying fundamentals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. Some of it goes to what you guys were talking about with, you know, teams can be of a different kind of age of their core, you know, players. And to y'all's point, Embiid has only played 21 minutes a game. And so we're still just starting to kind of scratch the surface of seeing what he can do. And he still looks really raw offensively in particular. And then, you know, in the Pelican situation, you've got Anthony Davis instantly playing like one of the best players in the league and logging 38 minutes a night and having no support around him. So that's, you know, a difference between those two particular situations. And then, if we're speaking in generalities, you know, you've got teams that can, you know, especially this early in the season, missing certain people, you know, who they have in the rotation. They're still trying to kind of figure out who they're playing. And the simple question of, you know, who has been lucky, I think, in some ways, you know, do teams have the same record, but does their underlying, for instance, point differential suggest or things these teams have played 6-7 games? Strength of schedule is another thing to look at. You know, it could just be who you have gotten in the first couple weeks of the season could radically, you know, make the difference in your record so far. So there's a lot of things that can kind of change two teams that have the same record on paper.
So I think Anthony Davis's dominance is probably more clear to see because we're used to it over a few years. Kevin Pelton, a basketball writer, wrote that Embiid, that the Sixers are 5.1s better per 100 possessions with Embiid on the court than they are off the court. And so I wonder, Chris, when you've done reporting around how teams use analytics to help their strategy and you know, who to bring in to teams and like and things like that, what are the Sixers supposed to do, given that they have seen Embiid this good in a limited standpoint? How does a team grow, not just through the draft, which is how the Sixers have been trying to grow for so long, but, you know, should they – when do they start to – build a strategy around Embiid, you know, where the ball needs to run through him or play sets need to be designed for him versus, you know, should they wait another 40 games to see if this
well, they
is real?
Pray, first off, that no more injuries.
Right.
I mean, for a while, I think they wanted guys that, you know, they saw value in guys that had some sort of injury. That's how they ended up with him in the first place. But you pray that he actually can kind of build on what he's shown so far and that he stays healthy. And then I think with the way they seem to use analytics, you try to see which guys really fit around him. And also, once you get everybody fully healthy, how does he play with Noel? You know, if Embiid turns out to be more of a rim protector, he's shown some capability of doing that, do you need Noel? And you've already heard about, you know, are they shopping him? Are they shopping Okafor, which they probably are? Or are they at least listening on offers for those guys? And if they are, it becomes something where you take all these guys that are similar sizes or similar skill sets, and you look to move some of them to try to fill some of the many holes that you have on that team, to particularly to get more shooting on that team.
I mean, I would hope anyway that they wouldn't really do anything this season because we have no concept right now whatsoever of how that core four, if you're going to name the core four as like Okafor, Noel, Ben Simmons when he's back, and also Embiid, we have no concept of how those guys play together or if the sample size on Embiid is so low right now that I don't even know yet if it's like, is he the guy that you work the ball through and build around? But then, like, they don't know.
What do you do if you're the Pelicans then, where you do know, as you were saying earlier, at least more about how that team performs? And doesn't seem like that team's more than, what, a 48-win team at,
they haven't
at the
been
max.
At this right. point, even at their, like, what you would say their maximum capacity was like 2 years ago when they made the playoffs and then lost in the first round.
Right, and Davis has been injured as well. We shouldn't neglect that. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, here you have two bad teams, at least on paper, and from a fan base and from a front office, what do you hope happens this season for even the Pelicans? Are you throwing in the towel and saying, well, we're only going to be 500 in a tough Western Conference?
Well, I don't think you don't. They need all their people back,
right?
Then they need to see for sure what value each of those individual. I don't feel like I'm that far out on a limb to say that the Pelicans, the way they're structured right now, are not competing in any large scale way. But they also don't know how much value each one of those individual players will hold to then restructure their team if they wanted to.
And it might be something, you know, when you jump out to an 0-7 start in the NBA.
Can you say jump out to when you're 0-7?
Well, yeah, what's the opposite of jumping
fall
out?
Back to.
Fall back? Yeah, jump, fall down.
Fall, fall.
Because you really want to jump out to an 0-7 start.
They're really, yeah, at the starting line, they really have stood still as everyone else has started running. And so, you know, the NBA is already, we've talked about this on the show before, how deterministic it is in terms of, you know how good most of the teams are, and you know how things are going to play out, and especially in the Western Conference. If you spot a seven games below, it's not even below 500. I don't even know how you would characterize it, because they have a net win differential of -7.
What does that mean?
Their wins minus losses is -7. You know, you, for all intents and purposes, might be out of the playoff race, you know, within like 2 or 3 weeks of the season starting. Right now, our ELO model has them at 5% to make the playoffs. And maybe, you know, given what we've talked about, the talent that they have, you know, who's not playing, maybe that's underselling them a little bit, but probably not by much. And so then, you know, you're kind of in this very depressing spot where you do have to figure out, it's almost worse to be in their position than a team like the Sixers, who are trying to figure things out, because you just have this one transcendental player and not a whole lot else.
And doesn't that put them in a little bit of a bind compared to the Sixers, because they can't reboot the team right now? They can't try and sell off everyone but Davis and say, you know, we'll build around him and it'll take 3 years to get back, because Anthony Davis' contract can't be for, what, another 3 or 4 years at the most.
Well, he just signed that extension, which I think might give him another three. I don't know exactly how long. And I also don't know their pick status. That's the only other thing I was going to bring up. Davis is still really young. I mean, last year would have been his senior year of college, I think, which is crazy to think about how talented he is with how young he is. But that, I mean, on the bright side, maybe that's the one thing you look forward to, is that I think this was a team that looked at how quickly Davis was growing as a player, and everyone said, this is the it team. They did that maybe 2 years ago. They finished as an 8 seed, and people were excited about their progress. And then they had horrific injuries all last season. Jrue Holiday is one of my favorite players in the league. He's a very good fit with Davis, but has not been able to stay healthy this year. Obviously has the off-court stuff with his wife. So maybe that's a way to kind of move things forward, because they have some really bad contracts on the books. So they don't have a whole lot of flexibility in terms of making that team better through free agency. But maybe there's trades they can make at some point, but they need to be healthy to be able to even sell those people off.
All right, let's leave it there. Best of luck to the Pelicans and the Sixers. We're rooting. I think I root for all bad teams. I don't know about you guys. I
root for the Sixers. I'm ambivalent to the Pelicans.
Which means basically you've been rooting for a bad team for a long time now.
Even when I covered them, they were pretty bad. Yeah.
All right, now to our significant digit segment, when a telling number from the world of sports is brought to us by someone. This week is brought to us by our producer, Joe Sykes, but Joe has told me that it is a surprise.
It's a surprise
about what the Sig Dig is. Joe, what is our significant digit this week?
Well, Chad, we're not going to do a significant digit this week.
Joe, that what? Breaks the system. It well, breaks come on, the Joe. Rhythm of the show.
Look, I posted the other day that I wanted to do an all election themed show, and no one was interested or keen. So
no, we
I've
were
sprung
interested.
This on
we
you.
We weren't keen because we didn't want to be embarrassed, Joe.
I've
There's
sprung this on you at the last, and what we're going to do?
Sports people, Joe.
We have an election themed podcast
already. Yeah, go subscribe.
There's an election. Inauguration There's day. An election today, so I thought. I don't know if anyone knew that, but there is one. And I thought it would be fun to find the presidential ELO ratings. And of course, Neil immediately came up with what we're calling the presidential ELO ratings.
You're calling.
Wait, so you're in on this?
You're
now?
Calling. Well, we dropped it in our Slack channel. And then
yeah,
I
and
kind
I
of,
said, no, we're not doing that.
I know, and then Joe did it anyway.
And I okay. didn't respond.
And you so, helped.
Which
so,
was tacitly.
So the presidential ELO ratings are, in fact, the historical rankings of presidents. And it's, you know, scholars and political scientists, and there's all these metrics that they rank them by. Anyway, we're calling them presidential ELO ratings.
You're calling them that.
So the quiz, and we're going to do a quiz, Chad, for all three of you. Can you name the top five presidents according to presidential ELO?
Are you going to give us some of the criteria?
Yeah, come on.
Well, you know, the
methodology. Percent of the popular vote they got? Is it.
So the criteria are presidential achievements, leadership qualities, failures, and faults.
Sounds very 538.
How wishy washy. This is BS.
This is hard data.
Lincoln?
Lincoln's got to be it.
Are you all going Lincoln?
Because this is about narrative and not actual. Yes, fine. Yes.
Do you not think Lincoln was right?
Oh man, hot take.
I don't want to go into his presidentialist history. This is my whole thing because I am not comfortable with my knowledge set on this issue.
I will be fine embarrassing myself.
Lincoln's number
one. I know it's not James Buchanan.
All right, FDR.
George Washington.
FDR's got to be in there.
Washington is number
three. It's like Family Feud. You should just ding them as we go.
Ding. Number
two.
FDR's two. Washington.
You've got two more to get.
Jefferson. No,
God, you guys are good.
Oh, we got
Jefferson
it. Okay,
is
okay,
number
but
four.
What if the accomplishments actually did harm to the country?
Hey,
then
Chad.
What?
Hey, Chad. Should we have some fun?
I veto this idea.
Where is Kennedy? Right?
It's election day.
Kennedy died too quick.
No, okay.
You're going Kennedy.
I didn't say he's in the top five. Just where does he rank? Does
Kennedy's 11. No, Obama's not ranked yet.
Do we care that he's racist?
Wilson. No, Neil's the only one who's got a guess left.
What do you mean? I didn't know there was a quota on the number of
guests. If Neil gets this, he wins.
Man,
it's all on me. So who have we named so far? We have Washington, right? Jefferson.
FDR.
Lincoln and FDR.
And remember,
can we consult before you use
non Kennedy.
And remember, these are some of the finest analytical brains who have come up with this presidential ELO.
Oh, yes,
that's what we're calling it. It's by the metrics.
Since you said Obama doesn't have any rankings, it's going to be a white man. That is that we know for sure.
Well, you got that right now.
Going out on a limb there. Let's see. Who else would rank high?
Not Grant, I don't think.
Do you want any clues?
Mm. Yeah, give us some clues, Joe. We need some clues.
Is he
on a dollar bill? I think we've named all of them.
No, not on a dollar bill. He really liked hunting.
It wasn't the dollar bill.
Yeah, it could be any denomination.
American currency.
Oh, Teddy Roosevelt.
Correct.
So
Nailed.
Two Roosevelts in the top five.
Teddy Roosevelt is number five.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
The imperialist warmonger, Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah. Wow, Joe. Wow. How dare you as
slams
a
on American
yeah. speak ill.
Although Joe did write his university thesis dissertation on the American Civil War.
Yeah. And Abraham Lincoln.
And wears a Gettysburg shirt at least two out of four.
That is true.
Yeah, but your
true.
Gettysburg hat broke, right, Joe?
And I got to say,
that's a metaphor for America in this time of deep division.
I got to say, they got the top two pretty spot on there, I would say. Lincoln and Roosevelt.
Really,
you can't go much further than that. Anyway, that was a fun segment, everyone.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Happy Election Day, listeners. Remember to go vote. You still got time when this podcast comes out.
You have 40 minutes.
Run to your polling station.
All right, Joe, thanks for that significant quiz. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chad.
That will do it for this week's show. Kate Fagan, thanks for talking presidential history with me.
Thanks, Chad.
Neil Payne, your stat man knowledge knows no bounds.
Well, you know, I do what I can. Maybe someday we'll come up with an actual rigorous presidential ELO. Probably not.
You really came through for us, though, on Teddy Roosevelt.
I always try to think about podcast softly and carry a large stick.
Yes.
I hope that high five was heard on the mic. All right. Our podcast producer is Joe Sykes. Our podcast historian is Jody Avergan. We got production assistance this week from Jonathan Yales, Tony Hsiao, and Jorge Estrada boycotted us. Not boycotted. They left us.
We are low on the pecking order.
Politics live show that's happening tonight, 538.com, all election night long. We'll be
listen
with
now.
You. Video at the top of every hour, just like we're a cable network. Jody Avergan from the Elections Podcast with our political crew. It's going to be great. Tune in if you're listening to this before the election. You can find us at your favorite podcasting app on iTunes, of course, as well. iTunes.com/538. Email us at podcast@538.com. We would love to hear what you think. Be sure to review and rate the show on email at iTunes. It all helps. It helps us hone. It helps us improve. Our theme song is by Mystery Mansion. I'm Chadwick Matlin. Talk to you next time.